Hey guys, my name is Amy Coonan, and I'm your host for The Town Hall, Rubicon's first and only podcast where we share advice for techies, for earth lovers, and for penny pinchers. As much as I love the sound of my own voice, this broadcast is going to rely heavily on guests who are subject matter experts on everything, ranging from how to get your small business up and running, interviews with some of the brains behind your favorite apps, and even how to remove garbage from outer space. You never know who's going to pop up and join me next in studio, so make sure to subscribe to The Town Hall on iTunes to get our episodes downloaded directly. And if your boss is making you work through lunch or your commute is just too short and you miss something awesome, don't worry, we've got your back. You can check out our blog for recaps, reviews, and all things Town Hall. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another awesome episode of The Town Hall. I am so excited about this episode. It is right in time for World Oceans Day, and I am joined via Skype by Emma Riley, the Director of Strategic Partnerships at Lonely Whale. And if you haven't heard of Lonely Whale, they are an incredibly, inventive and collaborative incubator, I think, that are consistently creating a positive impact on our oceans. The work is so awesome, and I can't wait to learn about everything. So Emma, thank you so much for hopping on and being here today.
Thank you for having me.
And before we get into all of the incredible things that you guys are doing for our oceans, let's back it up just a little bit. As someone who works in sustainability, I am always super curious to know what sparked your passion for ocean conservation. What led you to what you're doing today?
So growing up on the coast of California, I was exposed to sort of ocean conservation, ocean health at a very young age. My parents took me to Stinson Beach, just above San Francisco, Half Moon Bay, just below, from before I was born, you know, in the womb. So I've been interested in supporting the development of solutions for issues that are plaguing our seas really since I was kind of a young girl. And through my background in sort of entertainment development, media strategy, etc., found a really healthy place with Lonely Whale and applying sort of that work to furthering the attention to ocean conservation issues.
And for our listeners who aren't that familiar, can you dive a bit deeper, well, no pun intended, but to what exactly Lonely Whale is and does? You know, what is it? How long have you guys been around? Who started it? All that kind of stuff.
Yeah, sure. So we've been around for about 2.5 years. Adrian Grenier, an actor and producer.
I was really hoping that you were going to say his name so I would learn how to pronounce it properly. That's
there
a huge help.
There we go. Grenier.
Yep. Grenier. Yep. Got it.
An actor and producer, and Lucy Sumner, a film producer, had a really brilliant idea just about 2.5 years ago to combine sort of media marketing strategy and apply them to ocean conservation issues, right? To see if through greater awareness and sort of savvy and unique collaborative opportunities that are taken advantage of, we can drive real impact and greater change. So I joined the team right at the get-go. I've been there for about 2.5 years, and we've had already some significant wins under our belt. You may be familiar with Strawless Ocean or Next Wave, two of our sort of most prominent initiatives thus far.
And I always love when marquee names, you know, kind of use their fame for good. What is working with Adrian Grenier been like?
You know, Adrian is a good friend. He's an amazing boss. He is a deep, deep environmentalist and has been since sort of birth. I mean, if you ask him about his interests, it came directly from his mom, who raised him to really be aware of his surroundings. He oftentimes taps into how she would really acknowledge that cleaning your rooms it drives you towards being sort of aware of your surroundings in a way in which if you take advantage of sort of that knowledge, that wealth of kind of wisdom of where do I live, how am I living, etc., it'll apply throughout your life. And it has for him, you know. So I think when he was, and again, I can't speak for him, but when he was thinking about really sort of using his position as a thought leader within entertainment and whatnot, and applying that to an environmental issue, ocean health was at the forefront. But it really was, it has been and always probably will be rooted in sort of his mom making him aware of at a very early age, keep your surroundings really beautiful.
I never thought that I would get parenting advice from Vince from Entourage's mother.
I know.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? I mean, it's the truth. You know, it's a, I know that when I have children, if I have children, I will definitely, when I ask them to clean their rooms, relay sort of the importance of that in relation to environmental health in the world that we live in.
Absolutely. I second that. You know, a lot of times, especially working in the sustainability, philanthropic, you know, conservation realm, we hear buzzwords that get thrown around a lot that aren't, you know, truly defined for the public. And so will you be so kind as to define, you know, define market-based change, you know, what that means for you, what that means for Lonely Whale, and then kind of piggyback on that for me into how exactly, you know, you guys use that market to create campaigns that really do drive a significant impact.
Yeah, sure. One of the things that we wanted to solve when we were collectively, so I should say that sort of our core team, which is three of us, our executive director, Dune Ives, myself, and our digital strategist, Emmy Kane, have all been with Adrian and Lucy from the get-go. So when we were thinking through sort of what questions do we want to find an answer for, one of those questions were, why are there so many campaigns that don't actually have sort of a nice cherry on top of the sundae, right? That market-based solution that when you champion an effort, you get a bunch of people rallied behind it, you find some dollars to create cool content, people then can like access. There's this whole realm of campaigning that really just doesn't have, okay, great, you're now enthusiastic, you've signed our petition, and this is how you then live this on a daily basis. There really is sort of something missing within a lot of campaigning work that says, great, we just got you excited. Take it in, meditate on it every day. This is what you can purchase to be a part of this. And guess what? You don't have to actually radically change your life to continue living what it is we're asking you to live. So for us, as sort of a group of strategists who, again, really would like to apply and have been applying kind of sort of savvy marketing strategies to ocean health, we realized that we also needed to create a market for what it was that we're going to push people towards. So I mean, we have a handful of ways kind of that we're doing it, but the easiest one probably for your audience to digest, as well as the one that's been kind of the most widely publicized, was our Strawless in Seattle campaign and work. So last September, we kind of moved into the city of Seattle and decided that we were going to, within a very specific period, short period of time, so 30 days, run a campaign in which we were able to track collective impact and report back on a very specific data set that was the change that we created in the city by bringing in a market-based solution to a problem at hand, plastic straws. So we brought in an American manufactured alternative, a paper straw that's FSC certified, to the city of Seattle, partnered with just about 150 restaurants, the airport, the Seattle Seahawks, the Mariners, the Space Needle, etc. And we're able to track the collective impact of all of those spaces working together, shifting their supply, measuring that for 30 days, and landing then on a number that together they wouldn't have landed on otherwise, which was just over 2.3 million pieces of single-use plastic that we removed in 30 days in that city.
Wow.
So that was amazing, you know? And the reason why we were able to run it in a way in which it was impactful and it was successful and it was edible, right? I mean, it became so edible for a national and international audience.
Right.
Because we said, well, yeah, this is the alternative. Easy as that. It's the same price as the plastic straw. We'll have it to you the day you order it, or the next few days, or, you know, within the week. And so there's no reason not to. Your neighbors are doing it. Russell Wilson is championing it. You know, the Mariners love it. Why wouldn't you do this? You have a solution at hand. And it's that ethos is definitely an ethos that we apply to really all of our work, but very specifically our impact campaigning work.
I love that. And you hit, you said my two favorite words, which are data and tracking, especially in marketing. You know, one of my coworkers has this phrase, and I think about it all the time. He told me that I cannot manage what I cannot measure and that I need to let the numbers do the talking. I'm curious, what are some, you know, probably gut-wrenching numbers or statistics that you could think of to share in regard to what we as humans are doing to our oceans? Like, you know, no BS here. How bad is it and what are we doing?
Yeah, you know, so the two things that get me, so I love to cook. And I love to go to the beach.
What is your favorite thing to cook?
To cook. Okay. Pasta, like no lie. It's like a 4-year-old's answer, but I swear to God, it's my favorite food on the planet.
It's my favorite food.
Don't. Is it?
Oh, yeah.
I love it. And I'll go through these phases where I do like, you know, big pesto batches or big mare. So I like go over the whole, I'm like a pasta through to like, I'll make the sauces type of girl. But because of that, I love really good sea salt, right? Like if you're creating a dish and you're creating and you're building, let's just say you're building the sauce from scratch as well. You need a good olive oil, a good salt. And someone once said the three things you need in the kitchen are good sea salt, good olive oil, and good lemon, right?
Yep.
So the Guardian published a research, an article on a sort of a research project that they did a few months ago. It was maybe 4 or 5 months ago. And they tested 12 different table sea salts from around the world for plastics in the sea salt specimen that they had purchased from, you know, wherever it may be.
Right. So you mean to tell me there's plastic in my salt that I get at the grocery store?
All 12 specimens had plastic in it.
That is heartbreaking.
So you're not only consuming plastic when you eat like a fish. Like if you're in the Mediterranean or whatever it is, which by the way, the Mediterranean really doesn't have actually much fish left in it. But when you're consuming fish and then you decide to put a little bit of sea salt with that lemon and olive oil on it, not only are you consuming plastic that's in the fish already, because statistically most have plastic in them from consuming it in the sea, but you're also sprinkling plastic on your fish, right? I mean, the other thing, that's hard. That for some reason, that to me really sort of sunk in. The other kind of stat that gets me every time I go to the ocean, I love to go hiking. I'm a diver. I love to go hiking, but I go hiking and I'll hike down when I'm in Northern California to a cove called Pirates Cove, just above San Francisco. And it's a pretty steep incline. And so it's quiet. Very few people go down there. But every time I go down to this teeny tiny cove, I find shoes, balls, I mean, trash, water bottles, and it's washed up, right? It's completely washed up because there's no one else down there. It's maybe me and, you know, like someone having a small picnic. It's a small cove. What's insane is about 80% of the plastic and marine debris that's in the ocean is already at the ocean floor. So every time I go hiking and I end up, you know, in Tennessee Valley at the beach or at Pirates Cove or I go diving, you know, and I head out and I'm going down through already 80%. That's not it at the surface. 80% of what's in the sea in terms of marine debris is that the ocean floor will never see it unless we head all the way down there and decide to clean it up at that level. So that, you know, that to me, people think, oh, there's so much trash. There are all those islands, you know, whatever those, it's the size of Texas. It's the size of Paris. It's the size of, you know, whatever it is. Most of it is actually already at the ocean floor.
That definitely strikes a chord. Also, no wonder why you can eat so much pasta. You're hiking and diving all the time. That makes sense. Okay.
That's actually why I hike.
That makes sense.
I can go,
you know, I'm eating as much pasta and just sitting in this podcast studio. one of the reasons, you know, why I was so, as the kids say, thirsty, again, a bad water pun. I've been working on them all morning, to have you come on here was because of, you know, like you said, the easily digestible content and the viral campaigns that you guys are doing. I remember seeing the #StopSucking campaign, and a light bulb went off, and I was like, I've got to pick her brain. This is genius. So tell me a little bit about the Stop Sucking campaign. You know, you touched on Stralis in Seattle, TikTok, and some of the other stuff that you guys got going on.
Sure. Stop Sucking was really great fun to produce. So we produced it in part with an agency based in Seattle. We worked with their Seattle office called Possible. Lovely team. And we thought, you know what, let's try and create a viral social media sort of movement and moment in time, and let's kick it off with some fun content. So we roped in Van Jones. We, you know, called Adrian and asked him to bring in some of his friends. Daniel Franchisi from Mean Girls was super into it. And
I saw it was on his Instagram.
Oh my gosh. I'm seeing Danny on Friday, actually, in LA.
Tell him I want my pink shirt back.
Am I allowed to give a quick shout out to his comedy show in Venice on Friday night?
Plug him. Let's plug him, please. So he's performing in Venice?
He is on Friday night at 8:00. Oh my gosh, I don't remember the name of the place. He's going to kill me, but he's wonderful. Everyone check out his Instagram.
Google it. Follow him on Instagram. He's hilarious.
He is hilarious. So we shot this really fun piece of content at Milk Studio in LA. And then we thought, great, we're going to run a social campaign. So Emmy Kane on our team, a really brilliant digital strategist, put together what is basically a spider's web of this is how you create something that's viral online on social media, and pushed it. And, you know, because of the fun nature of it, and because it's corny and kind of cheesy and sort of cheeky,
right,
and not something that you would assume that a young ocean health or environmental health organization would promote, it did really well. I mean, frankly, going back to the top of this conversation, it's exactly what any company who hired a marketing or advertising team to come up with a strategy around how to get people to stop using single-use plastic straws would push. I mean, if you're thinking about the campaigns that like a McDonald's or a Starbucks or a Coca-Cola, they're witty and they're savvy and they're bold and they're kind of silly and controversial. And again, that was exactly what we wanted to do with our work when we created this company, this incubator, right? So it was our kind of our first go at it in terms of digital media as well as content development. And it was great fun. It was a really, really good time. And it went far and wide. I mean, the people that picked it up, it landed in over 30 countries worldwide. That's it's amazing. Now been translated into over 25 languages, including Creole, including many of the native languages. And you can actually find all of those videos on our website if you'd like to take a look at the diversity of kind of where this landed.
I remember getting an email and the subject header was like something along the lines of like, you really suck. And I was like, okay, I need to click this. And like, that's the kind of catch and grab. That's the gut punch that you guys are serving. And then you're able to, you know, spread your message. It really is inspiring. And as, you know, someone who works in marketing, I mean, there's a lot that everybody can learn from what you guys are doing. And, you know, at Rubicon, we utilize technology to solve, obviously, the global issue of ending waste. And I did a fair amount of research before this. You know, I like my homework. And I saw that Lonely Whale partnered with Dell, right, to create like a 4D virtual reality experience. Tell me kind of what that was all about. Like, what were the people seeing when they, was it goggles? How'd you guys do that?
Yeah, sure. So we have a deep and long-standing relationship with Dell. Dell is a really innovative company that for years has supported Adrian and vice versa. Adrian has supported Dell's footprint as their social good advocate. So transitioning out of that role, and recently, about a year ago, we as Lonely Whale, as Adrian's team, wanted to continue to have a relationship with them and further their interest in ocean health. While Adrian was working with them for about 2 years, he was able to sort of seed and spark interest in the issue in the company at leadership level, which is remarkable. So we have two projects with them. One is the 4D VR experience, and the second is an initiative and consortium called Next Wave. So the 4D VR experience is, honestly, it's really fun. It takes you, I can explain the whole thing, though it really wouldn't be as interesting as trying it out. But essentially, you go under the sea and you encounter a variety of sort of creatures. You encounter sort of an expert witness that describes what it is you're floating through and towards.
Oh, that's really cool.
And really what was most important to us, what was most important to Adrian, and what was most important to Dell while we were producing this, was including ocean pollution within the experience. So you not only encounter the beauty of the sea, but you also encounter the real issues. Seismic blasting, for example, is included in the experience, as are various kinds of marine debris, you know, et cetera. So that is sort of where it rests at the end of the experience. And our hope and our goal kind of with it, and Dell's goal really, because frankly, it was Dell's idea. It was Dell driving this project, and it's been Dell who's really taken it now all over the world, to the UN in New York and further. The importance of really exposing people to the beauty, but then reminding them that we have to keep it beautiful with exposing them to the pollution towards the end of it. So it's good fun. I hope everyone can experience it at some point. If you'd like to learn more about it, you can as well go to our website and find out where the full experience will be coming to you near you. However it is that, you know, I should say that if I was a movie promoter, I'd have it down, but I don't.
Yeah. Coming to a theater near you.
Coming to an installation near you.
One thing that I think that's unique, you know, especially about our podcast, is that I really try to keep the episodes evergreen. You know, you could listen to one in October and then the same episode in July, and I think the content would still be relevant and still hold true. And, you know, I'm lucky today, though, that we are recording before World Oceans Day. You know, it'll go out before then, but it's June 8th. It's about a month away. And just like global issues need global solutions, they also deserve some recognition. So what is World Oceans Day?
Sure. So World Oceans Day is June 8th every year. It started in 1992, and it was suggested by Canada's International Centre for Ocean Development as a way to sort of unify the chatter about ocean health and ocean conservation and solutions for the issues that are plaguing our seas. For however many years, the world really has kind of come together on that day and used it as a platform to promote awareness of our ocean. And that is more than anything else, frankly, and like, it is remarkable how few people that live in coastal communities, right, which always surprises me, and then right. Inland are just unaware of how important our ocean is. Every second breath we take comes from phytoplankton in the sea. And people don't realize that. I mean, people really do not realize that the ocean is dying, and with it, we will face, as humanity, some very serious health and environmental issues in the future. So World Ocean Day really is an important kind of platform, 24 hours, for various organizations, people, entities, etc., to draw attention to the importance of our ocean. We're a blue planet, and we need to continue to be, or we will face some very serious, very scary, and very trying times in the near future. We're nearly there now, you know.
Absolutely. It's terrifying.
Yeah, it is. It is. But, you know, there are, I have to say, World Oceans Day is also a really wonderful moment for those of us and people who are just simply aware of it and interested in ocean health to be inspired and to find that energy that I think drove them originally to work on this issue, because it's a moment when the world really does talk to one another about what it is that they're doing, sort of celebrate the innovative solutions that have come to light in the past year, and I think champion future work as well.
How can a small business, or how can a business or somebody get involved with World Oceans Day?
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question. I would say look to your local sort of community leaders. It's become sort of so well known that most cities, most states independently celebrate it, which is wonderful. And I would also say that if your city, if your local leaders aren't aware of it, aren't aware of the day, aren't aware of sort of the importance of driving awareness to the ocean and unifying a community at one point within a global celebration, it's your opportunity to create something new and ask them to and sit with them in developing what that looks like for your generation and the generations in your community to follow.
That is some fantastic advice. Now is my favorite part. I'm going to ask you 10 questions. You don't know what these are. You can have a few minutes or a few seconds to think about it. This segment performs really well because a lot of the content that we talk about on this show, you know, whether it's sustainability focus or small business focus, a lot of times we're, you know, have our corporate hat on, so to speak. And now it's time to kind of take that off, take our shoes off. And I just want to learn a little bit more about you. So what is your favorite vacation destination?
Tulum.
What was your first job?
I was a volleyball referee in junior high school.
That's amazing. You've been given access to a time machine. Where would you travel to and why?
The 1920s in New York City, because I love the Gilded Age. I love everything about it. I love reading about it. I love Fitzgerald. I love it all.
If you had to give up a favorite food, which would be the most difficult to give up? And I think I may know the answer.
Pasta.
There you go. What was the last movie that you saw?
Oh my God, I watched Caddyshack. Sorry, that took me a moment because I don't watch movies very often, but I watched Caddyshack recently.
It's hilarious. It's still funny in 2018. What is the best gift that you've ever gotten?
This is so corny, but I'm going to say it. I swear to you, every time I attend a beach cleanup, I find a sand dollar. And I have them all over my house. I'm not kidding you. I did one a few weekends ago at Ocean Beach in San Francisco and I found a baby.
That's so cute. That's not corny. That's amazing. What does your morning routine look like?
Hot water, lemon, answering emails really quietly, sort of in the dark before the rest of the world wakes up.
And how do you take your coffee?
Ooh, with half and half. I don't do that almond milk. I don't do oat milk. I don't even do 2% with half and half.
What was your first concert?
Backstreet Boys.
Mine too.
Was it?
Yeah. NSYNC reunited yesterday. That was exciting.
I saw that. For their Hollywood star thing.
I know. And they put out I could talk about that for hours. Back to the question at hand. Who is someone that you really admire and why?
I really admire our executive director, Dune Ives. She's a PhD psychologist, and she uses her understanding of human nature and in a way in which I've never seen someone apply sort of that understanding to environmental health ever before. I mean, it's amazing. So, you know, again, that's also kind of corny, but our team as a whole, I mean, Emmy Kane, my colleague, Lucy, Adrian, and our whole board, you know, just really amazing people.
Emma, thank you so much. And before I let you get back to saving the world, let's plug some stuff. First and foremost, okay. I did my research. Daniel's playing at the Rose Room. Doors open at 8 in Venice on Friday. But more importantly, how can people get involved with Lonely Whale? Donations, idea submissions, all that good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Send me an email. You know, we're about inclusive, sort of collaborative relationships. So reach out, be in touch. We want to know what our community is interested in. We want to know what they have questions on. We want to have conversation with you. I would say another really easy way to get involved with us and with sort of the world working on and within ocean conservation issues is stop using single-use plastic straws and then attempt to stop using other single-use plastics, as well as frequent restaurants, bars, establishments in your community that are aware of the issue. And if they're not, just chat with them about it. I think healthy conversation that, you know, drives people towards awareness while putting them down a path of having a little bit of fun at the same time is always a good thing. So, yeah.
Well, Emma, thank you again so much. I think we all learned a lot. I know I certainly did. And next time I'm in California, you and I will go on a hike and we will eat some spaghetti.
Yes, that sounds great. Spaghetti on me.